Doctor, my eyes have seen the years and the slow parade of fears without crying. Now I want to understand. I have done all that I could to see the evil and the good without hiding. You must help me if you can. Doctor, my eyes, tell me what is wrong.
Welcome back to Midday. I'm Tom Hall. If you've never been to the Jewish Museum of Maryland, you should definitely treat yourself to a trip. They're down on Lloyd Street at the corner of Lloyd and Lombard, just a block away from Atman's Deli, which, by the way, has the best corned beef sandwich this side of New York. Atman's also has great chicken soup, and if you go to the Jewish Museum these days, how's this for a segue, Marvin? You'll see the latest exhibition, which is called Beyond Chicken Soup, Jews and Medicine in America. The show explores how, as practitioners and patients, Jews have helped shape every aspect of modern healthcare and how for generations medicine has been a defining parameter of Jewish identity. My good buddy Marvin Pinkert is the executive director of the Jewish Museum, and he joins me this afternoon to talk about it. It's good to see you, sir.
Great to be here, Tom.
Medicine and the Jewish people really have this incredible interconnectivity, don't they?
Yeah, they do. When I started to think about this project, the first thing I did was I Googled Maimonides to see
Maimonides,
the great medieval Jewish philosopher and physician. And so I thought, who has the original papers of Maimonides? And I looked down, and in a little footnote it says, from the collection of Harry Friedenwald. And I'd already recognized certain Baltimore names. I've only been in Baltimore 4 or 5 years, but I did recognize the name of Harry Friedenwald. It turns out that Harry is part of 3 generations of eye doctors here in Baltimore. His father, Aaron, gave a lecture at Johns Hopkins in 1896, which was about the role of Jews in medicine. And he was so inspired that he went out and he collected the largest collection of manuscripts on the topic. His son was inspired. And then in 1948, he donates all of them to the National Library of Israel. And so we asked for a loan, and we got back some fantastic material, some of the oldest things we will ever have on display, Renaissance documents from Maimonides and other copies of Maimonides in Latin, etc., but some amazing stuff that became the start of the exhibit. And then from there, we decided to look at the place where science and culture meet and look at medicine in a slightly different way than other pure science exhibits might.
Yeah, and it's places like the hospital.
Right.
Places like the pharmacy.
Right.
You know, I mean, places where doctors and patients interact.
Right. And not just doctors, of course, nurses and other healthcare professionals, people in the lab, thinking about questions like, who's responsible for healthcare? These are questions that are very active in our political world today and are relevant going back a century and more.
Well, let me ask you that question then. I mean, what conclusions do you come to having put this exhibition together? What conclusions are people led to, if at all, as they walk through these various
rooms? Well, I hope people reach their own conclusions. And in part, one of the elements of the exhibit are interactives which ask questions like, is healthcare a right or a privilege? And allow visitors to both record and see how others have recorded their votes on questions of that nature. Who would you select as a doctor? The part of the exhibit deals with quotas and the way in which quotas restricted Jewish participation in the medical field in the 1930s, 1940s. And then says, you know, today we may not have formal quotas, but what we do have are choices that we make about who we're willing to be treated by. And that, of course, influences who can succeed as a doctor. So it gets you to think about historic issues in a contemporary context.
I mean, during the Second World War, the Roosevelt administration was one of the few places hiring Jewish lawyers and Jewish
right.
scholars. I mean, and as you say, I mean, it was not right now the notion of a Jewish doctor sounds quite commonplace and quite normal. And, you know, you say, oh, I have this great Jewish doctor. Someone's going to say, well, you know, what's her name? It wasn't always the case, was it?
And in fact, Rabbi Lazzarone, who was a rabbi here in Baltimore, wrote to schools around the country to check out the question in 1934 of whether there were quotas. And the answers he got back were incredibly candid. They talked about Jewish students having a superiority complex, and that another one said, the general impression is that Jewish student does not have as high an ethical standard as an average Christian student, that he's more likely to be commercially motivated. That's from the dean of the University of Kansas.
Yeah, these stereotypical associations with Jews in general.
And so they felt justified in restricting Jewish participation in the medical profession.
And then you also take up the notion of medical authority.
Right.
And the impact of medical authority. What do you mean by that? How do you explore that?
Well, what we look at is that going from the time we have a historic 1920s doctor's office, which was part of our collection. And so we go back to the 1920s doctor's office and the idea that the doctor was the sole source of authority on health care. And we end with the gym and with the way in which self-health is now such an important part of people's understanding and their desire to have shared authority with the physician. One of my favorite quotes, though, is actually attributed to a 13th century poet. He writes, "When you are in need of a physician, you esteem him like a god. When he brought you out of danger, you consider him a king. When you've been cured, he becomes human like yourself. And when he sends you your bill, you think of him as the devil." That was the 13th century.
13th century. Oh, boy. Some things just never change. Oh, that's incredible. Marvin Pinkert is the executive director of the Jewish Museum of Maryland. Their new exhibition explores the relationship of Jews in medicine in America. If you'd like to join our conversation, you can call us at 410-662-8780. You can send us an email, midday@wipr.org. Our Twitter handle, @midday Tom Hall. I'm also fascinated. I haven't gotten a chance to run down and see the exhibition yet,
but catch up.
I will do that soon, I promise. But, of course, the role of ritual in worship in the Jewish tradition, very important. And you explore the role or the existence of the ritual in the doctor's office between the patient and the physician. And I wonder, did you find any parallels there? Did you find any influence in cultural transformation or transference, rather, from liturgical practice to medical practice?
I don't know that we'd find a one-for-one, but certainly there was a lot of thought as to how to lead the ethical life as a physician in a way that was consistent with the ethical life that you'd been trained as in terms of your Jewish education. So I think there are some parallels.
So Jewish culture and practice.
Yes.
That's a large rubric for a lot of things. How do you think it is manifested in the medical profession in particular?
Well, I'm left to think of several specific examples. We have a section of the exhibit that deals with eugenics and genetics testing. It really looks at two periods in time, one the 1920s and the period when the American Eugenics Society was very strongly suggesting that everything was racially determined and that you should be able to breed out unfit characteristics in three generations. Because one of the targets of that group was the Jewish community, it really left a feeling that I think influences the more cautious approach to genetics and genetic testing, because the risks that are seen in terms of the way in which genetic testing could be used as another way to, in some way, perfect the race is something that overhangs a Jewish consciousness.
And that movement took place after the Second World War.
Right.
So this is after the Holocaust.
Right. And so I think that there that would be an example of the kind of cross-influence of Jewish culture on the way in which people approach medical issues.
And, of course, even a casual student of history knows about the terrible experiments performed on Jewish people in concentration camps by
right.
the Nazis during the war. You talk not just about the practitioners in
right.
this exhibition, but about the patients, not just the patients
right.
of the Holocaust, but patients in general. And how do you think Jewish culture and practice or the Jewish tradition has had an impact on the patients?
Well, I mean, I can look at it several different ways. In the early days, the creation of Jewish hospitals comes about because patients are concerned that the Christian hospitals of the early 19th century were sites of conversion, where people in a desperate state were being asked to change religion. And so the Jewish hospital was a defensive mechanism to make a comfortable environment for Jewish patients. And I think that, again, we get to it in the area that deals with self-health, in the way that different attitudes about healthy food have been influenced by patient cultures.
There has always been, and you make this the point, that this is not just a modern phenomenon, but
no.
for many, many generations, centuries, there has been a particular affinity, a calling to medicine by or from Jewish kids, Jewish
yeah.
Jewish people. What do you think? What do you attribute that to?
I don't think that there's any one factor. You know, after having spent so much time with the exhibit, you find that it dealt with people's ideas about what was needed in the world in terms of helping others. It was influenced by people who were concerned about status and professionalism. You know, there are lots of things that
yeah.
were influences.
Well, I look forward to seeing the exhibition, and congratulations, and thanks so much for coming in and telling us about it.
Thank you. It's up until January 17th.
January 17th. Marvin Pickard, he's the executive director of the Jewish Museum of Maryland. The current exhibition is called Beyond Chicken Soup, Jews and Medicine in America. It's there until the 17th of January, and we've got links to to all the details on our website, wypr.org/midday. Midday is produced by Rob Sivek, Bridget Armstrong, and Kathleen Cahill. Austin Coughlin from Clean Cuts wrote and directed and recorded the Midday theme music. Luke Spicknall directs and engineers the program and calls out the numbers every Friday night for the Midday Bingo Bash Party. Lunch for our guest today was provided by Pen and Quill, located at the corner of North Charles and Landvale Streets in Station North. They serve small plates, sandwiches, entrees, and an array of cocktails, wine, and beer Monday through Saturday starting at 5 o'clock. Menu and reservations at penandquill.net. Coming up Monday on Midday, the next installment of our series on religion in the public sphere, Living Questions. We'll take a look at the relationship between Catholics and Muslims in the United States. A new report on this is just out from some folks at Georgetown University. The report is called Danger and Dialogue. It examines how Muslims are portrayed in the Catholic press and how Catholics' views on Islam comport and diverge from the rest of the population. We'll talk to a researcher and a Catholic scholar and a Muslim scholar. We'll examine whether or not Catholics have less understanding and tolerance for Muslims than people of other faiths. That's coming up Monday on Midday. Until then, thanks so much for listening. Thanks for making Midday part of your day. I'm Tom Hall. Have a great weekend.
You've been listening to Midday with Tom Hall on your public radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR.